Today's guest, business strategist and technology futurist, Daniel Burris. You're listening to the Eagles Talent Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Eagles Talent Speakers Bureau.
For speakers who inspire, educate, and entertain.
You can find us online at eaglestalent.com. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Eagles Talent Podcast. I'm your host, Sheldon Senek. Remember, you can listen to our podcast on our site, eaglestalent.com, or subscribe to it on iTunes. Simply type Eagles Talent in the iTunes search. If you're interested in bringing any of the speakers in we have as guests on our podcast, you can do so by visiting us online at eaglestalent.com. When you want to know where technology is going and how to get your company to think in the future, there's one single person that enters my mind, Dan Burris. I recently sat down with Dan to talk about the future and, of course, his new book, Flash Foresight. Dan Burris, welcome to the Eagles Talent Podcast.
Hey, thank you. Great to be here.
Dan, we did a podcast over a year ago, and when you're talking business, economy, and technology, what a difference a year makes, right?
Wow, no kidding.
Dan, your new book, Flash Foresight, it's part history, part future, but all certainty. From the start of the book, you dive right into the economy, the oil and automotive industry, natural disasters. So I ask this, in a world of uncertainty, how do we develop certainty?
Well, I think what we have to do is understand that there is an amazing amount of certainty, and that is important because strategy based on uncertainty has high risk. Strategy based on certainty has low risk and high reward. So if we look at trends, and generally people look at trends, and we all know historically some work and some don't, the reality is there's two types of trends, hard trends and soft trends is what I call them. Hard trends will definitely happen. Soft trends might happen. Knowing that difference is really important, just as there are two types of change. Cyclical change, for example, talk to a farmer. They know all about, they can predict when it's going to be time to plant and when it's going to be time to harvest. Just like there are seasons, there are selling cycles, there's business cycles, there's biological cycles. Actually, there's over 300 cycles out there that let you anticipate the future, just like after winter will be spring. But on the other hand, there's another type of change that we didn't have to deal with in the past very much. I call it linear change, meaning that once this change happens, you're not going back. For example, once you get a smartphone, you're not going back to a dumb phone. Just like once you got email, you aren't all of a sudden not having email anymore.
Right.
So those linear changes are very important to track, as well as understanding the power of cyclical in determining certainty, just as understanding there's actually two types of trends, not one. And if you can look at your industry, you look at your business, you look at your business model, and then look at what are the things that might happen versus the things that will happen, not only to us, not only to our industry, but also to our customers and our customer's customer, you start getting a very solid picture of how you can gain new competitive advantage.
Elvis Presley, the king of rock and roll, still lives on and now in your book. You have a concept called the Elvis fallacy. I don't think you're questioning him holding on to the rock and roll crown, right?
Not at all. Not at all. What I really used him for was a good example of a soft trend, meaning something that looks good in the present but won't happen in the future. You see, what we do is we all use data to develop trends, but we have to be careful whether we're deriving a soft trend or a hard trend. So an example of a soft trend is Elvis. When he passed away now decades ago, in the first 10 years after he passed away, there was hard data that showed that every year there was an increasing number of professional Elvis impersonators. And I remember back then doing a study just for fun, and it showed that if you take that trend out, by the year 2000, 1 in 3 Americans would be professional Elvis impersonators. Now, obviously, that didn't happen.
Right.
But yet the numbers said it would happen. The graph said it would happen. The trend line said it would happen, but it didn't. Now, I know that our listeners might be thinking, yeah, but how does that relate to business?
Right.
Well, actually, it does. Back around the year 2000, our United States government was projecting a $1 trillion surplus within 5 years. Well, all of us know that by 2005 and even now in 2010, we've got the opposite of a $1 trillion surplus.
Mm-hmm.
How could they have been so wrong? Weren't they using numbers? Didn't they have PhD people looking at this stuff? And the answer is yes, they were looking at good data, but they were deriving soft trends. So it can happen to the government. It can happen to businesses. I mean, what happened to Polaroid? What happened to some of these big companies that were out there, even GM? And the answer is, you know, they were deriving a lot of soft trends, betting the farm on a soft trend. Never bet the farm on something that might happen. I would rather be looking at something that will happen. And to that other side, then, what is a hard trend versus a soft trend? What's the opposite of an Elvis situation? And that would be something that we know will happen. For example, with certainty.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned smartphones a few minutes ago. Let's just pick that as an example.
Mm-hmm.
There are many types of smartphones out there, the Droids and so on, the Android-based phones. Now we've got Windows 7s coming out, smartphones.
Uh-huh.
Let's just take the iPhone for a minute. The iPhone, will the new version that you don't have right now today, will it have more memory capabilities in it, not only in the device, but of course out in the cloud? And what's your answer? And the answer is, well, yes. And are you certain? And the answer is, well, yes, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
And if you look at bandwidth, I mean, we've got 3G wireless right now. Verizon is just starting to introduce 4G. Sheldon, what do you think will be next after 4G?
Got to be 5.
Thank you. See? And by the way, is that completely technically impossible? What do you think?
No.
No. As a matter of fact, the opposite. You know it will happen. As a matter of fact, if you look a little deeper, you can even get a time frame because you can graph it out. So that means bandwidth. We know about bandwidth. What about the power of the processor in there? And the power of the processor in that iPhone, do you think it's going to be a more powerful processor in that next version? What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Absolutely. Guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we've got more, see, now we've just listed 3 or 4 certainties. Here, let me give you another one. In my newsletter, my Technotrends newsletter, mm-hmm. which, by the way, I've been publishing for 25 years now, about a year and a half ago, one of the items we had is that there was a chip that was invented that you could put in a camera or a cell phone and
uh-huh.
project the image on a screen or on a wall from your phone.
Sure, I remember reading about that. Yeah.
Yep, it's actually, there's a few cameras and even a phone that has that now.
Uh-huh.
See, I found it's pretty easy to predict the future when it's already invented. let me just ask you a question. Do you think that image that's projected on the wall from a smartphone or a camera, do you think that image will get better every year, or do you think that's impossible?
Oh, it has to get better. That's
of course.
People want.
And by the way, are you certain?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we got another certainty. Now look, mm-hmm. let's just back up. If we're certain that that mobile device, whether it's an iPhone or whether it's a Windows phone or an Android phone, whatever kind of phone it is, that smartphone, if it's going to have more processing power, it's going to have more bandwidth, it's going to have more storage, it's going to even be able to beam images out of it, there'll be more data in the cloud. And by the way, we've got streaming video on those phones right now. Do you think the streaming video will be high definition streaming? What do you think?
It better be.
not only it better be, do you think it will be? What do you think?
Yes, I do.
Absolutely. And are you certain?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You wouldn't want to bet against that. Well, if we've got all those things, then I ask for the big transformation question.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to be able to transform, using mobile devices, how we train and how we educate? What do you think?
Yes.
And are you certain?
Yes.
And if you don't do it, what will happen?
Not much on your end. Someone else will
yeah.
take care of it.
Well, you just said it.
Yeah.
Someone else will. See, if you don't do it, someone else will.
Well,
now, what I just did in a few minutes is I illustrated the power of certainty so that we can all in the back of our minds start thinking, yeah, I know all this stuff is changing and it's changing faster every day, but I've got a lot of stuff to do. I'm busy. What I'm coming along, one of the things I'm saying, and by the way, certainty is one of seven principles in flash foresight that allow the invisible opportunities to become visible, allowing you to do what might seem to be impossible. So the and again, strategy based on certainty has all this power. So we have just said you could transform training and education. And by the way, in the book, what you'll also discover, we won't have time to talk about it today, Sheldon, is that we're going to transform in a short amount of time how we market, how we sell, how we communicate, how we collaborate, how we innovate. And if you're only changing those things right now, my worry for you is you will fail because change is too slow. Transformation is where we're at today. And a lot of people do think that transformation is just faster change. It's not. Not at all. Let me take a second just to give you the difference, because I think this is really important for people to understand. Mm-hmm. When I was a young guy, I could listen to my albums, and that was a 33 and a third black album, or the record itself was black, and it spun at 33 and a third, and I could listen to my rock and roll, my music on there, and that was it. And then years passed, as I got older, all of a sudden a welcome technological change, I emphasize the word change, came along. I could buy those albums on a smaller spinning disc. It was called a CD. Mm-hmm. And the advantage of that change was I got rid of the scratches, the hisses, the pops, and the extra noise. And, of course, it was space-saving. It took up less space. So instead of having one album per big spinning disc, now I had one album per small spinning disc that had no scratches and no hiss and no pops. And, by the way, I liked that. I even went out and bought all my old stuff, and it was great. But now I've got all my music in my phone, in my pocket right now.
Right.
Now, that is not a change. That is a transformation. Well, in that same way, now that you understand what I'm talking about when I say transformation, we are transforming how we sell, how we market, how we innovate, how we educate, how we train, how we collaborate, how we communicate. Now you get it.
Well, it's interesting because you look at iTunes right now, the commercials that they're running are, of course, on the Beatles, and their whole focus is really how the Beatles have transformed music and, you know, using that to showing how they're transforming the way you listen to music. And I think that's really a brilliant, you know, the ads are brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. As a matter of fact, one of the things that was really big with the Beatles and transforming music was using multi-track recording.
Sure.
And so a lot of people don't realize the reason – all of a sudden, those Beatles albums, those of us that were alive back at that time and listening to music, all of a sudden, the quality of the music was amazing, and the stereo was like you never heard before. And, you know, they actually had real separation, and, well, that's because they were using this technical transformation in the background.
Mm-hmm. Well, talking about technology and really the advancement of technology, you have a section called the 8 Pathways of Technological Advancement. And maybe if this concept was brought up in the 1800s, people might project a befuddled face, but not so much today. As a matter of fact, these pathways, as you call them, are now and the future, and it's impacting our lives. While we don't want to hit on all 8, maybe we can touch on a few. Dematerialization.
Yeah, now that sounds like, well, how would that work in my business? Why does that relate to me? Mm-hmm. Well, dematerialization means you can make things smaller. Mm-hmm. For example, let's take a medical ultrasound tool. Just a couple of years ago, to use ultrasound and to get a test, you had to go to a hospital, and it was a large piece of equipment, and they could roll it out with big wheels. And typically, they didn't roll it out. They kept it in a room because it was too big to move around.
Right.
Today, you can get that same exact functionality, and even a little better, by the way, and because better resolution, in something that's a little bit bigger than a cigarette pack. A little bit bigger than a cigarette pack. By the way, is it cheaper to manufacture? Oh, yeah. Is it less expensive to ship? Oh, yes. Is it more green and less carbon footprint to ship it? Oh, yeah. And now that it's that small, could it be in a clinic instead of just in a big hospital? And the answer is, oh, yeah.
Right.
In other words, making things smaller is unbelievably powerful. So we can make things much smaller and actually increase functionality. Look at my latest laptop is much lighter and smaller and thinner than the one before that and the one before that and one before that. And frankly, I like that. Keep going. So you can make things smaller. Let's look at another one, advanced simulations. And simulating is, like Toyota, for example. Mm-hmm. When they get an idea for a new car, how long does it take from the time they get the idea for it until it is actually in full production out the door? And the answer is 12 months. Well, how in the world can they do that in 12 months? Well, they simulate the whole thing ahead of time. Mm-hmm. They can simulate the size of the trunk, and then they simulate the golf clubs to make sure they fit in the trunk just right. They simulate the accidents and make sure they test everything. As a matter of fact, even the crash dummies have blood pressure, pulse, and temperature, and they can do autopsies on them much better than the ones that you see on television, which they don't even really use anymore.
Right.
They just show cars bashing each other because we expect them to do that. The reality is virtual accidents and virtual analysis of those crashes are far more generative of knowledge and information than doing the old dummies of the old days. My point is that a simulation was something that only car companies and jet aircraft manufacturers used in the past, but the reality is today advanced simulations can be done on inexpensive machines and can be used for wide ranges of industries, everything from agriculture and farmers using it to, frankly, I think just about any business could use advanced simulations. And by the way, if you think about an Xbox 360 and the other video games that kids play,
sure,
that we're talking about a three-dimensional advanced simulation engines that the kids are using every day.
It's amazing.
And maybe we ought to think about how to get that and that exact engine in that 360 Xbox being used to simulate some of the things that we're thinking about doing to see if it makes sense in terms of now we're talking manufacturing.
Mm-hmm. Many people and businesses are focused on getting back to where we were before the economy went downward. You're right. No recovery, no going back, only a surge forward into a very different world. What world should we be focused on striving towards?
I think it's important at this point in time, again, because we're not in just a change mode. I'm saying we're in a new ground now, rapid technology-driven transformation, that we have to ask ourselves, what do we ideally want to be, A? In other words, what do you want to be doing 5 and 10 years from now? Where do you want your company to be going? What kind of vision do you have for it? And are you undershooting, given what the capabilities are?
Mm-hmm.
A. Second thing I want you to be thinking about is, what is now technically possible?
Mm-hmm.
You see, let me just put it this way. 5 years before Lehman Brothers disappeared from the planet Earth, 5 years before GM went bankrupt, were the top executives in those two organizations really busy?
Yeah.
And the answer is, yeah, they were really busy right up to the end. In other words, being busy doesn't save you.
Mm-hmm.
Being strategic does.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, I think we need to use the power of certainty and understanding the transformations that are taking place, and sit back and ask ourselves, what is now possible that wasn't just a year or two ago? So let's understand what we could even do. Then let's ask, what is our ideal future? And I stretch and use the stretch word ideal in that if you may be able to do it. Usually we just don't even dare to think ideal.
Right.
And third, we better be thinking about the future, because in the past, the future in the past looked pretty similar. Next year would be pretty similar to last year.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty similar to the year before that. But this is new ground. It isn't going to be so similar. One other little last thought on that, because I know we only have so much time in this interview, and that is that you need to look at your past and ask yourself, what are the things that we need to take from our past that are vital for us to move and bring into the future so that we will be successful? But realize if you take everything, you will fail. What are the few things that are vital for us to take into the future that will actually increase our relevance?
Hmm.
So if I'm taking something from the past that will not increase my relevance in the eyes of my customers and the eyes of the people that I'm serving, maybe I really don't need that piece, because if I take too much, I'll fail.
In one of your chapters in Flash Foresight, it's called take the biggest problem and skip it. You're not suggesting we just forget about the problem, right?
Well, what I am saying is that the problem that you think you have right now, no matter how big it is, no matter how daunting it is, that's not it. You see, you're smart. You would have solved it by now. The reason we are stuck with these big problems is because it's the wrong one. So if you put that, in other words, your problem's not really your problem. There's another problem. You're working on the wrong one. So the only way to really discover what the real problem is to strategically take your problem and skip it, because it's like an onion. You need to peel it back to find out what the real problem is. Let me give you a very quick example. A number of years ago, I was working with Eli Lilly. I asked their executives, what's your problem? And they said, we got a really big one. And now right away, I had an advantage because I knew whatever they would tell me, that wasn't it. Because they're a big company. They would have solved it by now if they were working on the right one. Mm-hmm. So they said, well, we've got to hire about 2,000 additional PhD researchers to solve the molecular problems we need to solve to get more drugs in the pipeline. Because you see, the more drugs we get in the pipeline, the higher our stock price is. Mm-hmm. So to get our stock price up, we need to solve more molecular problems. To do that, we need more PhD researchers. Our problem is we don't have a budget for 2,000 additional PhD researchers. Mm-hmm. So then I invoked the principle. I said, oh, good. Well, then let's skip that. So here's what we did. Here's what they ended up doing. They ended up taking their molecular problems and posting them in a dozen languages on the internet and saying, we pay for solutions. Today, they've got thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of PhD researchers from all over the world submitting their solutions for their molecular problems, and Eli Lilly buys the solutions they want to buy. So now that you see what happened, let's go back to the original problem. Was the problem really they didn't have a budget for 2,000 researchers? No, that wasn't their problem. The problem is they had molecular problems to solve, and there's different ways of doing that. Matter of fact, there was a technical, transformational way. So to find your real problem, the way to do it is skip the one you think you currently have.
You have a whole section in the book that suggests instead of competing head-on with other businesses, you should go opposite. Tell us how the following a few companies here were able to do this. I'll list a couple here. Amazon and Netflix.
Yeah, well, let's just take a look at Amazon for a minute. Before Amazon came along, it was a brick-and-mortar, of course, bookstores. Mm-hmm. And the opposite of a brick-and-mortar bookstore is an invisible bookstore. Let's face it. Have you ever been inside of an Amazon? And no, you can't. It's the opposite. It doesn't even really exist in a tangible physical world that you can see as a customer. Uh-huh. Secondly, a tangible physical bookstore can have X number of books. Amazon, what's the opposite of that? How about every book that was ever published? That's the opposite. You see what I'm getting at is let's look at Netflix. Mm-hmm. The idea is that, I mean, I'm only giving you a couple of the opposites, by the way, there are many.
Sure.
In the case of Netflix, the only way to get a video was to go to a Blockbuster, and you could rent it, and then you had to go back and return it. And what's the opposite of that? Well, you go nowhere. You stay in the comfort of your home. It's mailed to you, and you mail it back. Wow.
And now they're also starting it to be a lot of movies are being available online that you can download. So
exactly, streaming it. So what's the opposite of having to mail it to you? Well, you don't mail it at all. It's just there for you. All you have to do is go online. So opposites really tend to work better. Think of it this way. The opposite of big is small. The opposite of fast is slow. The opposite of up is down. Mm-hmm. The opposite of inside is outside. If you are looking at whatever you're looking at, think of what is the absolute reverse of that. And all of a sudden, the subtitle of my book is How to See the Invisible and Do the Impossible. Well, frankly, history has shown that nothing really is impossible. Talking on a microphone was impossible at one time. Skype was impossible at one time. Mm-hmm. Even a light bulb in human history at one time was impossible, including sitting in a comfortable chair. So how has humans been able to do the impossible ever since we set foot on the planet? And the answer is, when you see an invisible solution and make it visible, when you see an opportunity that you couldn't have seen before, then all of a sudden the impossible becomes possible. So that's why I've got those seven, I call them triggers. Opposites is one of them that help you to see things you couldn't have seen before.
Reinvent and redefine. You write, it means seizing the opportunity to rewrite your own history before it happens. An example of redefining blogs and how they have redefined the news industry. And now even look at Twitter and how it has redefined blogs and communication. And then taking reinventing, an example of reinventing is a natural disaster occurs, like in New Orleans and Hurricane Katrina. In other words, how cities and towns or countries might reinvent themselves. Thinking about some established organizations, there is sometimes a reflex to defend and keep things the same. Are there ways to remove the protect and defend attitude, or are there just consequences?
I think that's a really good question. First of all, let's understand that protecting and defending the status quo is human nature and will happen to all of us. It will happen to me. It'll happen to you because it's human nature. But because of the certainty of transformation, I'm saying you need to get over it fast. Mm-hmm. Let's face it. In 1993, in January of 1993, IBM was the most admired company on the planet. They were making huge profits. The Fortune magazine rated them and their CEO as number one. Later in that year, they lost so many billions of dollars, they set a global record for losing more money than any other company on the planet Earth. How did that happen from going to the top to going to the bottom in 1 year? Mm-hmm. And, you know, one quick question is it because they had bad products? And the answer is, well, no. They had good products. Is it because all their people were stupid? And the answer is no. See, how smart you are, how good your products is, that doesn't help you. What happened is the future changed. Mm-hmm. See, we know where the future is, but when the future changes, we protect and defend the way we've been, and they protected and defended way too long, and the future shifted and they didn't, and unfortunately their customers shifted away. Let's look at even Bill Gates back in the mid-90s when all of a sudden we had browsers coming along and people could use the internet without having to know how to program. Uh-huh. And the first interview of Bill Gates was, you know, how does it affect Microsoft? And he basically said, no big deal. Well, that's because protecting and defending makes sense. As a matter of fact, he had just written a book called The Road Ahead and didn't mention the internet. And by the way, there was a rewrite. But my point is, it can even happen to guys like Bill Gates, who's in the tech business. But to Gates's credit, he got over it fast. It wasn't more than about a month or so, and all of a sudden he realized, wait a minute, hey, the future has changed, and we're going to be like IBM if we don't change with it. And he started doing something about it. So here's the lesson. We are with certainty in transformational change. And I only made a small case for that in this short interview. Again, if you want to really understand it better, get a copy of Flash Foresight. Sure. But that the point that I'm making is, with complete certainty, we are no longer in change. We are in technology-driven transformation. And that means protecting and defending is human nature. You need to use certainty to convince people to get over it and see the invisible opportunity that transformation represents. Because you can get people excited if they have a sense of certainty. If people are thinking that they are completely uncertain, then all you have is question, confusion, and more hunkering down to the status quo. So to answer your question, certainty is the key to unlock them from being stuck.
You have such a grounding moment in your book when you bring up W. Mitchell, a wonderful speaker in his own rank, who is wheelchair-bound and scarred because of two major accidents. Mitchell tells you, quote, "Before I was paralyzed, there were 10,000 things I could do. Now there are 9,000. I can dwell on the 1,000 I've lost or the 9,000 I have left." Further in, you write something that I truly think is well-stated about our own future. It is not what we hope for or are trying to create. It is a picture we actually hold, for better or for worse, what we expect and believe about our future. So whether it's in business or our personal lives, are you saying that we really have to take an honest look at ourselves?
I think it's really important to analyze what is your view of the future. Mm-hmm. You see, if how you view the future shapes to a great extent how you act in the present, and how you act in the present shapes your future. In other words, your future view will determine the future view. Will determine the future you.
Right.
So what I'm getting at there is that right now there are people that are selling IBM stock and there are people that are buying IBM stock. Mm-hmm. What's the difference? Well, their future view of IBM. Right now there are people, like young people, that are deciding to go to college and other people are deciding to go to drugs. They obviously have a little different future view.
Right.
So is your future and Mitchell's future view, unlike others that have had catastrophic personal tragedies or injuries, mm-hmm. Mitchell's future view wasn't, there's nothing I can do, I'm a burnt guy in a wheelchair.
Right.
Mitchell's view is, I could, you know, I used to have 10,000 things, now I still have 9,000 things I can do, and I'm going to do them. Well, that future view has given Mitchell a totally different life than someone who said, my life is ruined, it's over, I'm hoping for death. Mm-hmm. One other little one I'll just throw in very quickly. Uh-huh. There's another guy that I know that is a dear friend, and I think you might know him. His name is Jerry Coffey.
Absolutely. He's in the book as well.
And my friend, Jerry's in the book as well. And Jerry was a prisoner of war in Vietnam for 7 years. Mm-hmm. And I remember asking Jerry, I said, I'm assuming there's some of the guys that were in that prison didn't make it out alive. And he said, yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. And I said, Jerry, if you could boil it down to the people that made it out versus the people that didn't, how would you boil it down? And he said, well, the people that made it out knew they'd make it out. The people that didn't make it out said they're not going to make it. They can't make it. They can't take it. Both were right. Huh. What am I getting around to? Future view. So with certainty, I'm telling you we have all of this transformation coming. Since transformation is going to come whether you like it or not, that's why I gave you redefine and reinvent your business, because it's going to happen anyway, and either you're going to redefine it or someone else will. Either you're going to see opportunity coming or you're going to see total disruption and tragedy coming. And by the way, both of those will shape a completely different future. I see a mountain of opportunity. All we have to do is make sure that we take the time to see what that mountain is. Blow away the fog of bad news that you see every day on TV. Blow away all that stuff and see the mountain that is left. And the mountain that is left is true opportunity for all of us.
Lastly, Dan, what stands out about Flash Foresight is the book doesn't contain answers. It's not your 7 Steps to Success book. What it does do is set you up to ask the right questions, focus questions. Do you think that's a fair statement?
I think it really is. I mean, I'm giving you powerful tools in those 7 principles, those triggers that make the invisible visible. But what I'm trying to do is to teach you how to fish rather than just give you the fish. I wanted to give you a methodology that you could apply from now through the rest of your life and organizations could use to shape a positive future and to navigate through this time of transformational change. So it's really a changing how you think rather than telling you how to think. See, I think managers change how people behave, leaders change how people think. And what I was really trying to do is to give you some new tools that can, again, help you navigate through these times rather than just say, here's 10 trends, good luck.
Right. Well, Dan, I personally love the book. I read it, and I think there's just some great material in it. I just want to thank you so much for joining us on this podcast.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Again, I'm your host, Sheldon Senek, and you've been listening to the Eagles Talent Podcast.